Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to leaders that are scaling up their businesses. And in so doing, they are creating new ways of doing things. And we bring this knowledge to you so you can scale up yourself and also your business. And today, super excited to have Federico on the call. Federico is the business owner and founder of Design Accelerate. And prior to that, he's worked as a techpreneur in the fintech space. He's also worked in sales, and for his sins, has also worked in the legal world as well. And so super excited, Federico, to finally get you on the show. Welcome.
Thanks a lot. Nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Richard.
Before we jump into it, just to give you out there, the listeners, a bit of an overview as to what we're going to be discussing today. We're going to dive into what it takes to really create want for your product and your service. And in so doing, being able to really talk about your story and narrative such that you can sort of persuade people to either think newly or think differently. And this allows them to reach into you. So super excited to sort of get this underway. And let's start at the top. Bring sort of Federico into the conversation, and it'll be great to get your insights into the conversation, obviously, because you've been a techpreneur, you're also now in the services world. So I think let's start off with, what are you doing? What have you done in order to create want for either your product and your services as you've been a founder over the last few years?
Well, yeah, as a start, let me start saying that, well, you mentioned, say, the things that I've done since I graduated from college. I think now, like, reflecting on all the experiences that have been important in my life, I think what they all have in common is that there is always, as a, say, distinctive feature, a lot of interest for human psychology and how other people reason. Well, I started as a lawyer in criminal law, and there's definitely a lot of psychology involved into that, even though it's obviously a different kind of people than the usual one that you're having with a group of friends, up to, say, UX and UX design, which is what I do now, which is, then again, another way of investigating into how people think. And, say, the commonality of these experiences on one side, and on the other side, say, my curiosity for the world around me, are really the way in which I do things, and I've been doing things since I started. And this is, I think, very intertwined to what you said, the one. So what is the one thing that makes you different? Say, why would you be talking to me now instead of someone else? Why would you spend your time, say, researching, say, what I do and how I can help you rather than researching someone else? And I think what's important there is that you're able to convey your story by making it clear what are the things that make you unique and different from, say, all the rest. And that's always, say, it's not always easy, but that's always the key that I try to find.
Okay, so I'm going to convey my story so that's it's different. Okay, I think the story is, I feel it's one part, right? Because we all got a story, right? We've all lived lives, but maybe we don't have the confidence or the knowledge to really get that story out to our public, right?
That's true, yeah.
And how, if you don't have the confidence or the knowledge, maybe you're a first-time founder, or this is your first time in sort of the sales and marketing side of the world, how do you think one can build up that confidence and also that knowledge so they can start telling their story? And also, when they tell their story, they are themselves rather than what potentially society is asking them to be.
Yeah, and if I can add to that, actually, it's not only that, but say as an entrepreneur, yeah, there is a constant feeling that if your story is too unique, then you leave aside, say, a big part of your audience. Mm-hmm. So one problem that you often see with branding, for example, or positioning, is that whereas we have all heard at least once that we should try to, you know, only address a niche, be very specific, and really try to be unique, actually, we often then try to be as generic as possible to make sure that, yeah, I do this thing for you, but I want to make sure that I don't leave aside also someone else. And then the result is that you're very, say, generic, not specific for anyone, and then you'll just stay in the service. How do you tackle this? Well, from a business point of view, I think just data tells you that it makes a lot of sense. Like, for example, there we know that, say, the competition for our eyeballs is very fierce. We all know that we have really few seconds to make an impact, 2, 3, 5. And it's important there to be, say, as unique as possible if we want to keep the conversation going. From a more intimate point of view, so we say how to win the competition within ourselves, I think there the battle is a bit more, it's probably even harder to fight. I think the first question is, do you have the sufficient motivation? Like, you don't need to do it the same way in which you don't need to start your own company. You don't need necessarily to put your name out there. But if you do decide to, say, start something for yourself and bring an innovation to the world, then you should also understand that it can only be successful if it's unique.
And interesting, it can only be successful if it's unique. And we talked about niche, we talked about branding. So it's unique, but it's specific to a certain audience, maybe. And it needs to capture attention, eyeballs, as you mentioned. So, okay, but what drives this uniqueness? What drives your product and your service being unique and or different and or new as opposed to everything else that's out there? Is it you as a leader? Is it you as a leader having experience through however, you know, the years of your life? So you can bring a different perspective, a different point of view out there, and then solve a specific problem that's out there. Or is it something more general? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it depends by, say, what area you're talking about.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about, say, the company that you want to build, you and your personality definitely make the difference. I really believe in the fact that you should build your company based on your values. And somehow what you will always see is that the values that you have as a person are also transferred on people that work together with you. Also, I mean, you don't need to be the director of a company or the founder to notice that everyone around you also is influenced by the values that you have as a person. And that also goes vice versa. But if you talk about, say, the product or service that you use, I think there it's much less relevant, say, who you are and what makes you unique. Unless there is a way in which, say, your personality and your behavior can make the difference. And that could be the case, for example, of, I don't know, consultants or lawyers or a coach, for example. But if that is not the case, then I think the question shouldn't start from you. It should rather start from your audience. So I am a big, well, that's obviously, of course, also because of the work that I do. But I am really a big believer in don't start from the idea that you have in mind, but start asking your audience, say, what is, for example, a product that a problem that they have nowadays that is not addressed by anyone else? Or what is it that, say, is there a product that already addresses their problem, but not sufficiently enough? And I have, well, a lot of stories that I can tell from the past of either, say, discovering new products that solve problems existing or ways in which, for example, we have been seeing that people use a combination of 2 or 3 products at the same time. And then obviously there is something that you can do if, say, you can bundle the same kind of result that they receive by using all these products together into just one single thing.
Okay, you're asking, I'm with you. You got to find a problem. You can't just go out there and start talking. But ask your audience. So this is interesting, right? How do we ask our audience? How do we really engage with them? Yeah. I mean, it's not always easy. I mean, if we work in fintech, or if we work in edtech, or if we work as a consultant or coach, okay, well, we got an idea. We sort of worked in that space maybe for 10 years. Maybe it's we've seen a problem. But what are the tools to, maybe what are the sort of one or two tools to get out there and really ask 20, 30, 50, 100, maybe 1,000 people what the problem is?
Yeah, well, first of all, you said, yeah, how do you talk to your audience? But I think the first question there is, who is our audience, right? Yeah. So let's start with really defining who do we want to talk to. And then, yeah, when it comes to tool, like, I mean, the internet is full with any kind of platform of software that allow you to interview people, find people, scout for people, recruit, interview. But I really believe that the best tools you have are, say, your mouth, your ears, and your legs to go to find those people. I remember, for example, when we started in the previous company that I started, the persona that we had was, say, people between 35, 45, with kids, with really no time to dedicate to anything aside from family and career. And so the question is like, yeah, where do you find these people? I mean, they don't spend so much time on social network or other things because they literally have no time. So how do you find people that have no time? And then when we thought about it, it was like, yeah, I think probably the only thing that we have to do is either reach them when they're having dinner at their place or on, I don't know, Saturday or Sunday. And then what we did is we literally went door to door to ask each one of those people about problems that they had with personal finance and so on. And well, when I think about it, it was actually a lot of fun. But it shows that you don't need any expensive software to do customer research.
Yes, you just have to go out. I love it. You just have to go out there and know your audience and go out there and sort of hang out where they're hanging out, whether it's on Facebook as a social platform, whether it's at a sports club or at their house in this instance as well, right? And then when you find that problem, that's when you can start really knuckling down and maybe gathering a number of these individuals together to run a survey, as an example, to really gather the data required to understand their persona, understand their challenges maybe to another level of detail, and then start walking through the next phase.
Yeah, I mean, there are obviously many different tools that you can use, many different research methods you can use. I think in general, then again, for example, when you see surveys or A/B testing for probably a little bit of a later state, there is indeed a lot of, say, a lot of people have the tendency to use tools that create a barrier. You know, it feels safer to send a result rather than pick up the phone or meet someone and ask about the problems, which I totally understand. And I mean, it's also much more effective, right? You click send and then you send emails to a lot of people that can answer your survey. But it is a risk when it brings us far away from, say, the qualitative part of the research, which is about like going to people, empathize with them, understand what their problems are.
Yeah, I love it. And that's the authentic side of business, right? Because you're in business to solve problems for people. And there's a people element to this where you just hit the nail on the head there, right? And I think also to just go one step further, if you want to get into business, you sort of have to deal with people. Believe it or not, it's the one common denominator that you can't get away from. So you need to build up that confidence and that knowledge to go out there, maybe knock on doors or host webinars or host live events, whatever it may be. But you need to engage with your audience in some way that they can connect with you, right?
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
And as you go through this process, I guess we're also looking at triggering a thought in someone's head and persuading them in a way to think slightly differently than maybe what they have in the past, or totally differently, because it could be a disruptive idea or a disruptive service. So, you know, as you work through your story and your narrative, how have you used either text, video, or other mechanisms, or even face-to-face, to really communicate your idea such that your prospects can understand exactly the differentiation or the new idea and why this is going to be good for them to jump on and sign up to.
Yeah, well, I think that, say, when it comes to persuading and nudging, there is something that I'd like to say before that. Yep. I think that especially when you work in innovation, the primary task that you have is to try to create something that doesn't exist yet and solves a real problem.
Yeah.
And if that is your mindset, actually what you notice is that there is not so much nudging or persuasion that you have to put in practice. So to be clear about that, you know that you can always, you know, divide users into users that do have a problem, users that are aware of the problem you're trying to solve, users that, say, being aware, have tried to put in place parts of the solution that you're offering. And I think that, yeah, when you work in innovation, it's always a better idea to start from the end. So instead of trying to nudge users or to persuade the users that are not so convinced about your product, I think it's a better way of spending your resources for which the problem is already much stronger. So when it comes to, say, the psychology of persuasion, so to say, I think it's much better to apply that to very competitive industries, for example, where kind of everyone, say, if you say that you are an accountant, I think everyone knows what you do. Probably everyone knows that they will need you at some point in time. And I think they're persuading them could be, say, one of the tactics that you want
it's not meant to be a derogatory word here. It's because persuasion is maybe also giving your audience the knowledge or the education that's required. I know you split it up into three personas there, but you might be a new kid on the block. So even if there isn't an educated user out there, you need to talk to them about your product and your service and, you know, move them up the ladder so they can then look at you as the go-to. Whereas obviously, you know, if it's someone that maybe is not aware of, doesn't know how to solve the problem and is not aware of how to look for products and or services to solve that problem, there's a slightly different angle to it. It is persuasion, but it's more sort of educating and getting them up that ladder again. So yeah, I just wanted to sort of bring that into the conversation, because when we are talking to our audience, and we do want to make them think about things slightly differently, persuading them, but at the same time, and it's ultimately an education, right? We're educating them in a way and on a system that maybe we've developed or, you know, we've developed with others.
Yeah, that's correct, indeed. I think rather than talking about persuasion, it's better to talk about, say, education and the necessary awareness that you need to cover, say, at the beginning of any funnel, of any conversation that you start with people. That's true and that's correct. The point that I'm trying to make is that when you really start from zero and usually also have limited resources, I think it's a better use of resources to, say, explain how what you have really solves a problem to people who already know they have that problem, rather than educating a new audience to the fact that they might have that problem.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It makes complete sense. And as you talk about innovation, we talk about education. I just want to come back to the side of it and the unique side of coming up with a business and idea and starting to create that one. I guess part and parcel of innovation, uniqueness, entrepreneurship is also making certain you as a leader come up with a purpose, and that purpose could be an innovative product or something to solve. You're solving a problem innovatively, or it could be slightly larger in scale. You're looking at an industry and trying to solve something or move into a new direction. So I think having a purpose, but I believe having a purpose is really a catalyst to start. You start that at the top and you drill down to your uniqueness, unique selling point, your brand, and all the other things that obviously fall together as you build up both that want. You also identify and educate your customers, and you then start communicating to them. Because if you have that purpose, you can sort of hang everything else off the top of it, and you can start communicating in various ways. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's very important that you talk about this. And I also have to confess that, especially at the beginning of my entrepreneurial experience, I really underestimated the importance of what you call purpose, or say the values that you have, the vision that you have as an entrepreneur. And actually, probably purpose is even more than just vision. I only realized it later. When I did, that was really, disruptive. That led me to see anything else, any new thing that I was doing, or the past things that I was doing, like with a different pair of glasses. And the answer that I give to myself now, when it's some years that I've been an entrepreneur, but obviously also not at the end of my career, I think that, what you call purpose should be both the things that you mentioned, should be both a very long-term thing, but it's also something that should allow you to make every day of your professional journey a success. So I fully understand that a lot of us, we want to bring a huge innovation, and we really have this kind of dream or rainbow that we're chasing. But I think in order to make it sustainable, it's very important that, your purpose is also reflected into the things that you do every single day, so that after every single day, you can say, today was a success.
Yeah, I love it. And you hit the nail on the head. I think we both agreed on that point. And as you go out and you've done all this work on purpose and brand and, your people and your personas, what platforms right now are you leveraging to communicate with your audience, your prospects, and your customers? And I think right now is one question. What platforms do you see coming up in the future that you think you'll be leveraging in to connect with your audience, prospects, and customers?
Well, on this, you obviously know that I'm on LinkedIn, because that's where we met each other, right? Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't say this live, but I'll say it anyway. I said the other day, LinkedIn is a great platform, and I love it for business. It's similar to a dating platform. You find people, you connect with them, and if you really hit it off, you sort of do a podcast or something else, but it is an amazing platform. Yeah. Anyway.
I think LinkedIn, for what I do at least, is the number one thing. So I'm trying to connect with people that are like I was, in this coming year. So an entrepreneur who is in their early stage of their company, primarily, tech entrepreneurs. And I noticed that LinkedIn is definitely the platform where I was spending my time before to find information, connect with other people. Yeah. So that's also where I want to be. For the rest, I have a bit of a different point of view than what you usually hear from, growth hackers or marketers who say, well, go where your audience is. Well, I fully concur with that.
Yeah.
But I think you should also be where you're comfortable with. To give you an example, a lot of people that do what I do also find Twitter to be a great tool. Mm. I've tried to be on Twitter, and to be honest, I just don't get why I should spend my time there primarily. Mm. And so that leads to the fact that I believe that my presence on Twitter is not that credible. Mm. Because every time that I tweet something, it really feels like, rushed, like just throw something there and go away. And it doesn't feel like I do want to spend my time there. Mm. So if you will see me, posting regularly on Twitter, that means that either someone else is doing that, or probably I will have changed my mind about Twitter, which is an option. But if I am so regularly on LinkedIn, for example, it's because I primarily think it's an extremely valuable platform. Mm. So my choices are mostly driven from what I believe in rather than where I think I should be. Well, with all the consequences that can come from this kind of approach.
And what about things such as Clubhouse? Have you tried it out? Have you taken a look at a peek at that?
Yeah, I think Clubhouse is very interesting, even though I'm still a bit on the fence. And obviously, nowadays you hear also about TikTok, and everyone is comparing TikTok to what, YouTube was some years ago. Yeah. So TikTok is now, for 16 years old doing dances, but it could become what, YouTube is now. But I also think that there is a bit of anxiety to really identify the next platform for the future, the one where, you start being today and can really yield great results. At some point, this kind of platform will come. But yeah, then again, you should also be aware of the resources you spend there.
I guess also the platform, it also depends, it depends how you use it and how you get people from a platform out of that black box onto a different sort of platform, right? Maybe more internal, et cetera, right? So, because you can't just hang out there and have a conversation. Yeah. You want to extract that data and move them more internally into your business and sort of make it more credible and worthwhile. Have these one-on-one conversations like you and I are having, right?
Yeah, definitely. Look, in the end, what you want to do is to be able to have the interaction on your own ground. Exactly. So what people often say, don't build your castle on someone else's land. Say, don't spend so much time on building, for example, content on a platform that exists today and might not exist tomorrow. Mm. That's why it's probably, say, less rewarding to build on something which is very established. But at the same time, if Clubhouse doesn't exist anymore, then you've suddenly lost all the effort that you put there.
And there's new platforms. And there's new platforms coming up. There's out of the States anyway. I'm having them on the show in November, and they're specific for financial services in this instance. And the platforms in and around, getting content creators from the financial services world and giving them space to help each other in trading, investing, et cetera. And I think these type of, so it's a LinkedIn or a TikTok for specifically for financial services. And these again, obviously are in sort of beta mode, but that'll be interesting to see what comes out of that, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff obviously around crypto, around NFT and also, you know, content creators like yourself and myself getting involved in those, I guess, more specific and targeted to sort of platforms and audiences would be, you know, it would be interesting to see how that evolves, right?
Yeah, indeed. Because also, I mean, every platform is very crowded. We all say that what you often find is not quality content, but in the end, we all look for quality content. The problem is, say, where content creators, for example, like you and I do, and probably we've always done it at least once, you also stuff your content with a lot of promotion, a lot of advertising, which it's then the moment in which the platform becomes too polluted. Like, for example, say a lot of people often complain that on LinkedIn, they only have, you know, salespeople in their network. And I think your network is only as good as you make it. So yeah, it can be one of the ways in which you use LinkedIn, but I think they should also always be vigilant about making sure that you do the right use of that. And also demand from other users also a good use of that platform, because otherwise it loses value real quick.
And listen, what do you think are the three, as a founder, CEO of multiple businesses, what do you think are the three tips that you could give our listeners as they go through their journey of scaling up and looking to create that once, looking to make certain they speak their narrative or communicate their narrative more succinctly? What are the three things that, you know, you would give them to round up the conversation?
Yeah, and what do you mean by that exactly?
Well, what are the three tips? If you were talking to me today and you said, Richard, these are three things that you should do as you look to really get people interested in your business, get your story out there, and get some really good income. What are the three things that you think are important?
Well, yeah, I think the first thing is what we covered before. So make sure that when talking to other people, you start from them. So make sure that you start by telling them a story that resonates with them, because it starts from their pain, something that is interesting for them. Number two, I really like, you know, the framework of Simon Sinek, why, how, what, how. Yeah. And I think that's very important. Like, make sure that in your communication, you always cover all these three aspects.
Yeah.
Here again, I can say one thing that I'm often, say, responsible of. I often tend to focus a lot, for example, on what I do, covering the why or the how. It's it's something that I need to give some more thoughts on. And we all naturally have a tendency to focus. I also know a lot of people that really focus a lot on the how of things, you know, or the risk if, for example, for each one of these things, there is a risk in focusing your communication too much on one aspect.
Yeah.
And then the third is also, I think also, to give yourself some slack. So, you know, it's often easier to tell other people what they should be doing, how they should 100%. Be communicating, rather than doing it yourself. Doing when yourself. I look at the copy that I write sometimes, it's like, oh my God. And when I receive feedback from other people, it's often also very harsh. And then I always remind myself, it's easier to tell other people what to do rather than doing it yourself.
Yeah.
So pat yourself on the shoulder and at least you're doing it, right?
Yeah, at least you're getting out there and and turning it up every day, right?
Yeah. But also, since that is true, give yourself a framework to make mistakes. So, for example, if you want to write an email subject line, don't only write it once. Write it 5 times. Test with at least 2 or 3 different ones. So don't see your work only as it always needs to be a masterpiece, but see it as a work in progress. Allow yourself for testing, failing, making mistakes. So don't be harsh on yourself if you don't manage on first attempt.
Yeah, brilliant. So some brilliant advice. And as you look forward and you start sort of thinking about, our eyes look at sort of Christmas and then into the new year, I know it's scary. Yeah. I shouldn't say that, but hey, there we go. What questions are you starting to ask yourself and what factors are you considering as you look to expand and grow?
Well, as we said before, I recently started my new business. I knew that I started with a long-term vision, which for me is to create a full service agency in the area of UX.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I really noticed that the way in which I steering my decisions, it's from 2 months to 2 months. So not even quarter to quarter, but 2 months from 2 months. What I decided for myself is that in this very first year, I am starting only with very flexible corporations, which allow me to, say, take work, but at the same time, not incur all the risks of fixed costs or permanent corporations.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, no matter how well things go, I'm not hiring anyone before at least 1 year. Mm. And that's what I'm still sticking to. I have to say that so far, say things have been very good because of what you notice is that it's often like when you proceed in your career, it's a bit like a snowball. So the network that you have from before is incredibly helpful if you have a quality network. And then things have kind of come easily the more you go on in your career. And that has been the case so far. Yeah, but as I said before, no matter what, I'm sticking to, now it's really about delivering quality service to, say, the people that I'm working with at this point, the projects that I'm taking. I am exploring some cooperation with, for example, a very good friend of mine who's way better a graphic designer than I am.
Nice.
And someone else who is, say, more focused on the research area. But at this point, I still want to keep it very lean.
Nice. Okay. So it sounds exciting. So you're building up some head of steam, getting that, getting those first wins and then seeing exactly how and when to move and scale. So it's super exciting, right? And part of all of this, it sounds like you're going to be learning consistently. There's going to be more, you're going to be gaining knowledge. You're going to be shifting, maybe adapting as you go through it. And as part of that, how do you self-educate? How do you make certain that on a consistent basis, you're educating yourself such that you can make the right decisions at the right point in time? Maybe there's podcasts that you listen to or YouTube channels or books that you're reading. I know there's a book that you're reading. So what are you doing right now to self-educate?
I think it's a very good question because I am experiencing a new setting for learning, for dealing with people that can help me in my learning curve. Before, for example, with the previous company, we were part of a venture builder.
Yeah.
And one of the great things about that is that you are surrounded by a network of advisors that can help you. Also, the people that invest in your company are a great way to learn. And obviously, say, your colleagues. Now, I started with a conscious decision to start everything from myself. Mm. And so one of the first things that indeed I noticed is that I was missing the interaction with any kind of network around me that could help. What you mentioned, like podcasts, books, are, I think, a great way to start. I found it very beneficial. There is one tool, it's called ADP List. It's a company from Singapore that matches you with possible coaches, for example, or other people that can share your interests. And there I found, for example, a very interesting person from Singapore. Yeah. And we decided to regularly have, say, meetings in which we advise ourselves on the problems that we're facing, give each other feedback. It's a bit like a sparring session, let's say.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So it's not, it's important to have a network and people that you can go out and speak about your challenges to, and also share ideas with, right?
Yeah, I think so too. Like also around 2-3 years ago, I tried to start a similar thing, but more like in presence here in the city where I live in Utrecht. Yeah. And well, I noticed that it's something that requires a lot of time to dedicate, but I do not exclude to do something similar. Also when, you know, all the COVID rules will start to ease, and things will be also like meeting in person will be a little bit easier. I might look into that again. Yeah. I still believe a lot in peer to peer.
Brilliant. Yeah. So listen, brilliant to have you on the show today. It was fantastic to dive into your knowledge and your experience of how to really scale up different parts of your journey as founders and entrepreneurs are moving towards what they want to move towards, move towards their ideal scene. So it's a super great show. And for our listeners today, I mean, we've spoken through some really big nuggets here. We spoke through purpose. We spoke through brand, being able to be unique in the market, identifying personas, and personas could be multiple personas, and also what platforms to start using and leveraging as you go out and you start connecting and communicating with your audience, prospects, and also your customers. And part of this journey, as we mentioned at the during the show, is purpose and branding. And when I'm talking to prospects and clients, this is the first thing that I actually indeed talk to them about, because it is powerful, as Federico mentioned during the call, it's powerful to get right, because it can lead you down a path and lead you down a path that is full with opportunity. And it gives you, once you define your purpose and also that brand underneath it, it can give you that slight lift up and kick to go forward and sort of really move towards where you want to move towards. And, you know, what I want to do with all of you folks listening, if you have any questions on that, drop me a note to richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Or, you know, you can easily go onto my website and take a look at, you know, scheduling maybe a free consulting talk, and we can jump into how to define your purpose and also your brand. Because if you are facing challenges with that, it is always nice to talk to someone. So my website's www.scaleupconsulting.co, or drop me a note on my email. And Federico, for you, brilliant to have you on the show. Really enjoyed it, and looking forward to watching your success over the next 12 months and obviously into the future.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me here, Richard. Thanks a lot.